first two scripture readings this morning come from, firstly from the Gospel of Matthew, and then from the book of Revelation. And Peter's going to lead us in those readings. Thank you, Peter. We reflect in the first reading on God's kingdom, and then secondly in Revelation about the fall of Babylon. We're in Babylon at the moment in the book of Daniel. Babylon has a future, but it's not a bright and merry future.
Jesus told them another parable. The kingdom of heaven is like a man who sowed good seed in his field. But while everyone was sleeping, his enemy came and sowed weeds among the wheat and went away. When the wheat had sprouted and formed heads, then the weeds also appeared. The owner's servants came to him and said, "Sir, didn't you sow good seed in your field? Where then did the weeds come from?" "An enemy did this," he replied. The servants asked him, "Do you want us to go and pull them up?" "No," he answered, "because while you are pulling the weeds, you may root up the wheat with them. Let both grow together until the harvest. At that time, I will tell the harvesters, first collect the weeds and tie them in bundles to be burned, then gather the wheat and bring it into my barn." He told them another parable. The kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed, which a man took and planted in his field. Though it is the smallest of all your seeds, yet when it grows, it is the largest of garden plants and becomes a tree, so that the birds of the air come and perch in its branches. He told them still another parable. The kingdom of heaven is like yeast that a woman took and mixed into a large amount of flour until it worked all through the dough. Jesus spoke all these things to the crowd in the parables. He did not say anything to them without using a parable. So was fulfilled what was spoken through the prophet. "I will open my mouth in parables. I will utter things hidden since the creation of the world." Then I saw another angel flying in midair, and he had the eternal gospel to proclaim to those who live on the earth, to every nation, tribe, language, and people. He said in a loud voice, "Fear God and give him glory, because the hour of his judgment has come. Worship him who made the heavens, the earth, the sea, and the springs of water." A second angel followed and said, "Fallen, fallen is Babylon the great, which made all the nations drink the maddening wine of her adulteries." A third angel followed them and said in a loud voice, "If anyone worships the beast and his image and receives his mark on the forehead or on the hand, he too will drink of the wine of God's fury, which has been poured full strength into the cup of his wrath. He will be tormented with burning sulfur in the presence of the holy angels and of the Lamb. And the smoke of their torment rises forever and ever. There is no rest, day or night, for those who worship the beast in his image, or for anyone who receives the mark on his name, of his name. This calls for patient endurance on the part of the saints who obey God's commandments and remain faithful to Jesus." Then I heard a voice from heaven say, "Write, blessed are the dead who die in the Lord from now on." "Yes," says the Spirit, "they will rest from their labor, and their deeds will follow them."
Now let's turn in the Old Testament to our text in Daniel chapter 4. Daniel chapter 4 on page 877 in the Pew Bible. King Nebuchadnezzar, to the peoples, nations, and men of every language who live in all the world, may you prosper greatly. It is my pleasure to tell you about the miraculous signs and wonders that the Most High God has performed for me. How great are his signs, how mighty his wonders. His kingdom is an eternal kingdom. His dominion endures from generation to generation. I, Nebuchadnezzar, was at home in my palace, contented and prosperous. I had a dream that made me afraid. As I was lying in my bed, the images and visions that passed through my mind terrified me. So I commanded that all the wise men of Babylon be brought before me to interpret the dream for me. When the magicians, enchanters, astrologers, and diviners came, I told them the dream, but they could not interpret it for me. Finally, Daniel came into my presence, and I told him the dream. He is called Belteshazzar, after the name of my God. And the spirit of the holy gods is in him. I said, Belteshazzar, chief of the magicians, I know that the spirit of the holy gods is in you, and no mystery is too difficult for you. Here is my dream. Interpret it for me. These are the visions I saw while lying in my bed. I looked, and there before me stood a tree in the middle of the land. Its height was enormous. The tree grew large and strong, and its top touched the sky. It was visible to the ends of the earth. Its leaves were beautiful, its fruit abundant, and on it was food for all. Under it, the beasts of the field found shelter, and the birds of the air lived in its branches. From it, every creature was fed. And the visions I saw while lying in my bed, I looked, and there before me was a messenger, a holy one coming down from heaven. He called in a loud voice, "Cut down the tree and trim off its branches, strip off its leaves and scatter its fruit. Let the animals flee from under it and the birds from its branches, but let the stump and its roots, bound with iron and bronze, remain in the ground, in the grass of the field. Let him be drenched with the dew of heaven. Let him live with the animals among the plants of the earth. Let his mind be changed from that of a man, and let him be given the mind of an animal, till seven times pass by for him." The decision is announced by messengers. The holy ones declare the verdict, so that the living may know that the Most High is sovereign over the kingdoms of men and gives them to anyone he wishes and sets over them the lowliest of men. This is the dream that I, King Nebuchadnezzar, had. Now, Belteshazzar, tell me what it means, for none of the wise men of my kingdom can interpret it for me. But you can, because the spirit of the holy gods is in you. Then Daniel, also called Belteshazzar, was greatly perplexed for a time, and his thoughts terrified him. So the king said, "Belteshazzar, do not let the dream or its meaning alarm you." Belteshazzar answered, "My lord, if only the dream applied to your enemies and its meaning to your adversaries. The tree you saw, which grew large and strong, with its top touching the sky, visible to the whole earth, with beautiful leaves and abundant fruit, providing food for all, giving shelter to the beasts of the field, and having nesting places in its branches for the birds of the air. You, O king, are that tree. You have become great and strong. Your greatness has grown until it reaches the sky, and your dominion extends to the distant parts of the earth. You, O king, saw a messenger, a holy one, coming down from heaven and saying, 'Cut down the tree and destroy it, but leave the stump bound with iron and bronze in the grass of the field while its roots remain in the ground. Let him be drenched with the dew of heaven. Let him live like the wild animals until seven times pass by for him.' This is the interpretation, O king, and this is the decree the Most High has issued against my lord the king. You will be driven away from people and will live with the wild animals. You will eat grass like cattle and be drenched with the dew of heaven. Seven times will pass by for you until you acknowledge that the Most High is sovereign over the kingdoms of men and gives them to anyone he wishes. The command to leave the stump of the tree with its roots means that your kingdom will be restored to you when you acknowledge that heaven rules. Therefore, O king, be pleased to accept my advice. Renounce your sins by doing what is right, and your wickedness by being kind to the oppressed. It may be that then your prosperity will continue." All this happened to King Nebuchadnezzar. 12 months later, as the king was walking on the roof of the royal palace of Babylon, he said, "Is not this the great Babylon I have built as the royal residence by my mighty power and for the glory of my majesty?" The words were still on his lips when a voice came from heaven. "This is what is decreed for you, King Nebuchadnezzar. Your royal authority has been taken from you. You will be driven away from people and will live with wild animals. You will eat grass like cattle. Seven times will pass by for you until you acknowledge that the Most High is sovereign over the kingdoms of men and gives them to anyone he wishes." Immediately, what had been said about Nebuchadnezzar was fulfilled. He was driven away from people and ate grass like cattle. His body was drenched with the dew of heaven until his hair grew like the feathers of an eagle, and his nails like the claws of a bird. At the end of that time, I, Nebuchadnezzar, raised my eyes toward heaven, and my sanity was restored. Then I praised the Most High. I honored and glorified him who lives forever. His dominion is an eternal dominion. His kingdom endures from generation to generation. All the peoples of the earth are regarded as nothing. He does as he pleases with the powers of heaven and the peoples of the earth. No one can hold back his hand and will say to him, "What have you done?" The same time that my sanity was restored, my honor and splendor were returned to me for the glory of my kingdom. My advisors and nobles sought me out, and I was restored to my throne, became even greater than before. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and exalt and glorify the King of heaven, because everything he does is right, and all his ways are just. And those who walk in pride, he is able to humble. This is God's word. Let me begin by asking you a question this morning, congregation. What's your testimony? What's your testimony? If you've had the privilege of being a Christian for as long as you can remember, it's very easy for you to think that your testimony is pretty ho-hum average. It doesn't quite seem to cut it compared to dramatic conversion stories from conversion from a life of sex, drugs, and rock and roll, or from radical atheism. I grew up in a Christian family person. But let me share my testimony with you this morning. I'm someone who likes to reach my goals, although preferably without having to put in too much effort to do so. At school, if I had a choice between lots of study to, say, get a really good mark, like 95%, or I could just quick read through my notes and get 80%, I'd choose 80% every time. And that's what I did. I was that annoying kid in your class at school who didn't try very hard but got good marks all the same. I didn't need God's help to accomplish my goals in life. I could just reach my goals by cruising along. And so I was cruising along through university one day until I wasn't. I'd taken on a full-time job 4 weeks before the semester ended to earn some cash. And the only subject I found particularly difficult, maths, I only needed 40% in the final to scrape through. I think I must have gotten 39. Here I was, fooling myself that I could reach my goals on my own without applying myself, and certainly without God's help. I was lucky to barely get into second year. Cruising wasn't working, and nor was demanding that God would do the things for me that I couldn't do or didn't want to do myself. But with Jesus, I found someone who could give me a satisfying reason, a satisfying answer to work hard and to do the best I can. And that's when I realized that I needed to commit my life to Jesus. My goals used to be very self-centered, which was why I was happy to trade not putting in much effort, because it gave more time for me. But Jesus gives me goals that are other-centered, recognizing that life isn't just about me, but it's about loving God and loving others with all the strength I can. I'd always believed in Jesus, but I'd never really grappled with what it meant to live for him in the details of life. And so now with Jesus, I've been given motivation to live, to set goals that love God and those around me. Life on cruise control never gave me the satisfaction that lasted, but life with Jesus does. What's your testimony? What's your testimony this morning? And I've spent time asking that question and answering it, giving my answer to that question, because Daniel 4 is all about testimony. It's King Nebuchadnezzar giving us his testimony. But it's not really about Nebuchadnezzar at all. It's not a moral lesson about pride coming before a fall, although that's true. No, it's a story and a testimony about God. Through Nebuchadnezzar's life, God is giving us his own testimony. What's your testimony? See how the chapter begins, verses 1 through 3. King Nebuchadnezzar, to the peoples, nations, and men of every language who live in all the world, may you prosper greatly. A polite greeting. It's my pleasure to tell you about the miraculous signs and wonders that the Most High God has performed for me. He's addressing his testimony to the world, you're included. And then he gives us this testimony about God. How great are his signs, how mighty his wonders. His kingdom is an eternal kingdom. His dominion endures from generation to generation. And it all began one night in the palace with a dream, a scary dream, a nightmare. I'm guessing you've not had nightmares about trees before. Although I could be wrong, you may never have had a dream about a tree at all. But God sends Nebuchadnezzar a dream about a tree. It's far from nightmarish to begin with. A giant tree that's enormous, it's large and strong, it's visible to the ends of the earth. It had beautiful leaves, it had abundant fruit as food for all, it's got shelter for all the animals underneath its branches and the birds living up there at the top of the tree. Then an angel, a messenger from heaven, comes and cries, "Cut down the tree and trim off its branches, strip off its leaves, scatter its fruit, let the animals flee from under it and the birds from its branches. But let the stump and its roots bound with iron and bronze remain in the ground, in the grass of the field." And then, as can only happen in a dream, the tree suddenly becomes a person. Did you notice that? Not let it be drenched with the dew of heaven. Let him be drenched with the dew of heaven. Let him live with the animals among the plants of the earth. Let his mind be changed from that of a man, and let him be given the mind of an animal till seven times pass by for him. With the dream also comes a message. The decision is announced by messengers. The holy ones declare the verdict so that the living may know that the Most High is sovereign over the kingdoms of men and gives them to anyone he wishes and sets over them the lowliest of men. What testimony of God is Nebuchadnezzar to learn? Surely it's this: that God is sovereign over earth and her kingdoms. God is sovereign over earth and her kingdoms. I think we'd have to say it'd be very tempting, wouldn't it? If you had earthly power and an earthly kingdom, to glory in yourself. It's very tempting when financial prosperity is at hand to take credit for all that's happening in your life. It's very tempting when you've accomplished so much to take pride in everything that you've done. And that's true for us to some degree, but it's even more true for the emperor of the world, for King Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon. I am that tree. I'm great and strong. I provide for the peoples of the world. My greatness is without limits. The world is mine. I'm a self-made man. Look at me in glory. In glory they did. Nebuchadnezzar presided over one of the greatest empires in earth's short history. Nebuchadnezzar is credited with constructing the Hanging Gardens of Babylon, one of the seven wonders of the ancient world. Here's an artist's impression of the Hanging Gardens based on archaeological work in the 19th century, described as a remarkable feat of engineering with an ascending series of tiered gardens. Contained a wide variety of trees, shrubs and vines, resembling a large garden mountain with a screw that drew up water from the river Euphrates to irrigate the upper terraces. Truly magnificent. And what's God saying to Nebuchadnezzar? I'm in control, not you. Your great achievements, your great accomplishments, they're not your own. They're a gift from me. The power that you treasure and that others admire and that you enjoy, a gift from me. It's all from me. It's grace undeserved. You see, I give kingdoms to whomever I fancy. I raise up the lowliest of people to sit upon the throne. The throne is a gift. Power is a gift. Accomplishments are a gift. Everything is a gift. Therefore, humility is certainly in order. If everything is a gift, then there's no place for pride. Because what God gives, God can take away. Just like that. And take away, God does. That was Nebuchadnezzar's humbling experience. That's the testimony he gives us when God withdrew his gift. The king was walking, as you do, on his rooftop terraces, surveying the great city of Babylon, the hanging gardens, the palace, everything. And he said, "Is not this the great Babylon I have built as the royal residence by my mighty power and for the glory of my majesty?" And while the words were still on his lips, God began the process of humbling him. Driven away from civilization, living in the wild, eating grass like the cattle, unkempt hair like a hairy coat all over him, uncut fingernails like claws as they grew longer and longer and curled and around, drenched with dew, not living in a house, living under the open stars. And for some people, that turn of events, that change in circumstances would have them mad. Mad at God. Mad at God even though perhaps they don't believe in him. Just not fair. The God I don't believe in is responsible. Not Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar instead pricks up his ears and hears God speak to him through his 7-year period of suffering. He paid attention to God's testimony such that when his kingdom was restored to him, this was his own testimony now. His dominion, God's dominion, is an eternal dominion. His kingdom endures from generation to generation. All the peoples of the earth are regarded as nothing. He does as he pleases with the powers of heaven and the peoples of the earth. No one can hold back his hand or say to him, "What have you done?" God is sovereign over earth and her kingdom. And that's a message, I think, that would have put hope in the hearts of God's people. God's people struggling and suffering in exile, living as a minority, an oppressed minority in the world. That's a message that would have encouraged them despite their difficult circumstances. Why? Because it means that God isn't absent. God isn't just like a ship that's being tossed to and fro by in the face of a storm. Our future isn't at the whim of a petty earthly president or prime minister or dictator. It's all in God's hands. I read a book a year ago or so called The Insanity of God. Catchy title, right? It was written by an American missionary couple to Kenya. It's a story of a great crisis of faith. After spending over 6 hard years doing relief work in Somalia, he saw the fruit of converts. He saw the fruit of conversions, people coming to know Jesus, only to see them die to extremists. Every single convert. And his experience was that it looked like God had turned away completely and that God was clueless about the tragedies of life. Experiencing a crisis of faith, he left Africa. He and his wife left Africa asking God, "Does the gospel work anywhere when it is a really hard place?" In America, church plants are flourishing. What about here? Does it work here? Does the gospel work anywhere where it is really a hard place? Every single convert is dead. God is insane, he thought. But he came to see on a long and lengthy journey that God's kingdom building plan actually includes what appears to be insane. Insanity, like allowing Babylon to invade the promised land, seeing most of the Israelites die and the rest being taken as captives into a foreign land, a pagan land. Insanity, you'd have to say. But seeing the sovereign hand of God, one has hope. Hope in exile, hope in suffering, hope in struggle. Why? Because God isn't absent. And the future is in God's hands. God's people were to return from exile, and they did. They would rebuild and begin again, hopefully this time having learned to depend upon God rather than upon themselves. Except they didn't. Persia, Greece, Rome, each would take their turn until the rock uncut by human hands appeared, who came ushering in a new kingdom. One kingdom to rule them all. Nebuchadnezzar's great tree was cut down. Rome, the Babylon, the great in Revelation 14 fell. And Jesus spoke of a kingdom that would be a tiny mustard seed, an insanely small beginning, so unassuming, so little, so tiny, and yet would grow so that the birds of the air come and perch in its branches. Jesus knew his Bible. Jesus knew the book of Daniel. It's a kingdom that didn't trumpet its arrival on earth. It didn't arrive with pomp and ceremony and splendor, but it began in a little cattle stall in a small town called Bethlehem. And Satan, who claimed authority over all the kingdoms of the world, who claimed total dominion over the kingdoms of the world and their splendor, Satan thought he had won a great victory over God's suffering Son upon the cross. The heir is dead. But in fact, a plan that seemed insane meant that death was not the final word. And Jesus rose again, claiming all authority in heaven and on earth, and sending out his disciples to disciple the nations. And friends, that's where we find ourselves today. Jesus has sent us out like lambs among wolves. That's what he said. It's madness. Who sends out lambs to pasture when there's a wolf in the paddock? What farmer do you know does that? What farmer does that? He's sending you out like lambs among the wolves. It's madness. It's insanity. At least it would be if the future is uncertain and God just finds himself hoping for a lucky break. But friends, when God is sovereign over earth and her kingdoms, then we rather see it as a masterstroke. Triumph not without suffering like the world promises, but triumph through suffering, through the midst of suffering. A people who go forth heralding hope even if they suffer, even when they suffer for their faith. A king who offers motivation to work hard and to do the best I can as I bear testimony to his sovereign power and his greatness. Brothers and sisters, Nebuchadnezzar offers us his testimony this morning, that the God of the Bible is great and mighty, that he is sovereign over the earth, that he possesses an eternal kingdom that endures from generation to generation. And he offers us his testimony as well, that when we turn from our sin, God offers forgiveness. God offers a new start. That's Nebuchadnezzar's testimony. What's your testimony? Amen.